Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. The Bigger Picture with Ryan Hwang.
Money FM 89.3. Good morning. It's the Breakfast Huddle. I'm Elliot Danker. It's time now for the Bigger Picture with Ryan Hwang. And this morning, we're looking at, you know, the past couple of days and the way markets have closed. And that one question really comes to mind. Is there worry that perhaps growth is slowing down?
Well, if you look at the latest indicators with China and U.S. manufacturing indicators, those have been pointing to a slower pace in growth. And that really reinforces that, hey, maybe the boom times are over after the COVID-19 stretch where we saw, in a way, disruptions and low base effects playing out. So that may be over in terms of peak growth. And that is being seen with how bond yields fell to their lowest overnight in nearly 6 months to now around 1.18%, and oil prices down over 3% because of those worries about the economic outlook and to a certain extent as well, OPEC boosting supply. So to get the bigger picture, I've got David Ho. He is the investment strategist at RHB Bank Singapore. Morning, David. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Ryan. Hi. I'm doing good.
Hey, David, glad to have you on. Now, let's get your reading of the pulse of the markets first. You know, we've got bond yields down and a lot of things happening in the backdrop. What narrative are you seeing playing out right now for markets?
Basically, there's not much change that we're expecting. They are all in line with our base case scenario. In terms of the valuations of equity markets, I think that the US is still on the high side. But we still believe there's still more room to grow, given that the fiscal and monetary policies are still supportive. But we are still advocating a diversified approach towards the US sector. So probably following the MSCI World Allocation Weightage of about 60%. But all in all, I think we are still quite bullish on equities compared to bonds. I think bond yields are still pretty low given the low interest rate environment. So it's not really that particularly attractive as well.
Now, David, you talked about how you are looking at still some upside in the US. And there's despite valuation on the upside. So walk us through your asset allocation approach. How much do you put in the US? And is that the best place to get upside?
Probably for us, I'm still in the bank. So we are still advocating a global approach. So within the global funds that we are pushing out is around 60%. On the other allocations, in terms of equities, we are actually bullish on European equities, given the cheaper valuations. And so we are seeing kind of a rapid pace of vaccination in the Eurozone. So they'll probably benefit from economic reopening later this year and also the next year as well. I think one of the key things that we are seeing is the UK Freedom Day that happened recently. Yep. So that may be the template for the Eurozone to follow as well. So for the Asian front, I believe the Chinese equities all over has gotten a lot cheaper given the recent sell-off. But we are still quite bullish on it. I mean, given that we will probably be a bit of headwinds, short-term headwinds, but potentially a longer-term beneficiary run for Chinese equities. But in other Asian regions, such as probably Indonesia and Thailand, we are not particularly bullish, given that they are still kind of hammered by the havoc from the Delta variants of the COVID-19. So that is actually causing us a bit of trouble for allocation. But all in all, I think we are looking at the USD dollar strength as kind of one of the factors to reevaluate our asset allocation, given that the US dollar has always an inverse relationship with global growth, right? So we did see signs of US Fed hawkishness, but it still remains dovish. So we'll probably have another 1 to 2 years to run for a weaker dollar strength, which will probably drive global growth mandate that we are seeing.
Now, David, it sounds like there's a bit of a bias towards the US and Europe when it comes to geographic markets. Walk us through the sector basis, because I'm looking at some of the earnings comments and outlooks coming out. Some industrials are warning of rising costs and some tech companies are warning of slower growth. With that in mind, is that a sector you're still looking at, technology names that have maybe run past their boom times?
I think on the sector basis, it's really hard to replicate the same outstanding performance for the tech sectors we had last year. So, but that doesn't really translate to negative performance. I understand that the common consensus is probably that for Q4 this year, they're going to have a drop in terms of earnings. But we are still quite bullish on it. We think that the overall macroeconomic backdrop is still quite supportive. So the rotation that I think a couple of months back, there was this hype regarding a value rotation. It didn't really particularly pan out. I mean, if we look at it over a long-term track record, for a value rotation shift, it doesn't really last particularly long. So for us, we have always been advocating a balanced approach, keeping things balanced, so diversify your investing. We are still opining for a kind of cyclical investing. We prefer the bank stocks. We think that these are the sectors that will definitely benefit from the economic reopening, and probably governments and countries striving to get things normalized to how they were pre-COVID days. I think that's the key thing that we're looking at.
All right, Chang David Ho is the investment strategist for RHB Bank Singapore. Now, David, we've talked about tech in the US. How about tech in China, especially with the backdrop of what's happening with the clampdown? What should investors who are currently invested in China do? Should they be cutting exposure or should they see this as a buy on a dip opportunity?
I'm probably biased towards buying a dip. I'll probably just share a bit on why. I think it's been all over the news given the market itself, primarily in the tech, the education and also the real estate sector, right? But we did see just a couple of days later, the Chinese authority and also the state media step in to calm the markets now and say that it's not really particularly targeted to certain firms who are trying to just regulate the entire financial market just to for a stable and consistent growth. I think these are the key things they're looking at. It's the stable and constant growth that they are looking at. So if we look back to what started out regarding this market sell-off, it was probably started last year when Jack Ma, Alibaba, made a statement condemning the Chinese regulators, right, regarding a stifling of innovation. So it gradually progressed to this massive sell-off. If we look at the bigger picture, it does seem arbitrary as well because policy risk has always been one of the key risks if you invest in China A shares, for example, given that they do have a higher risk premium and a lower valuation. But if you look at Chinese policy, it has always been a key driver for growth. So it has been a double-edged sword. You see it in a wider picture. So right now we are seeing analysts, fund managers probably relooking at the strategies and just repicking, just putting heavy weights on what the Chinese authority are saying. But if we zoom into what are the focal points in terms of growth, right, we do see a shift to three main areas. First will be mainly the national security and probably a self-reliance in terms of the technology sector, especially after the Huawei saga. In terms of the recent headline news regarding TT and also Tencent, issue particularly related to the management of data, which is a key reason for the increase in scrutiny, as I believe that data is the new big thing in this era of political and financial control, right? So we did see Chinese have a push towards a lease of shares back domestically instead of the US. So this is like the first area of growth they are actually looking at. The second will probably be the growing and stabilizing of the China middle class. And the third will be narrowing the inequalities between the high and low income segment. So we believe that this sell-off won't necessarily translate to a 2015 China yuan devaluation crisis. I think the probability of this is pretty low, but nevertheless, we expect a short-term headwind. Okay. I think all in all, we believe that the China A market, to really invest in this, first there's two main points. First, you need the experts' eyes and legs on the ground. So definitely, you need them to be on the lookout. So I have always been an advocate of mutual fund vehicles for China A rather than index fund. Mm. So even though you are savvy investors, for US, you can do it. But for China A, do go for someone who has the expertise on the ground. So second and most important rule of thumb to make money in China is to definitely align your views to that of the China Communist Party. I think that's really the key going forward from now.
Okay, that's a very good fundamental thinking there. Of course, one of the things that we are also tracking is what's happening in the crypto space. And that has seen the momentum fading since sometime in May. Is there a correlation here when it comes to what's happening in crypto space and the stock markets?
Is it really fading though? I think it's hard
depends
to determine
on the time frame.
The action, for the crypto as a whole. I mean, if you look at it on the negative aspect of cryptocurrency, I mean, given this rise since I think January, we saw it from 60,000 all the way to 70,000 plus, then it went down, right? So during this crypto fanatic phase, we saw stable coin such as the iron titanium collapse, even though it was labeled as a stable coin. So this really gives little meaning to stablecoin itself. So additionally, we see how the U.S. managed to seize back the Bitcoin paid during the Colonial Pipeline hack. So it did put a bit of worry on the investors who actually bought crypto, thinking that their investments are autonomous or discrete. We have plans of, like, I think we heard plans of crypto tax even coming in. So these are the things that probably will reshape the entire crypto market itself. But on the flip side, we have the believers like our renowned fund manager, Cathie Wood, who is very bullish on Bitcoin. So she may be right, but maybe ahead of time. But right now we are seeing it's kind of highly unlikely that we're going to replace the fiat currency entirely. But if we use the kind of momentum in crypto market using headline news as a benchmark, right? We did see that, for example, the phase seems to be dying down. Mm. But it seems to coincide, right, with the U.S. talk of tapering the stimulus package. So if you recall, at the start of the year, we talked about something called flows before pros, so whereby investors' funds drive asset prices up. So this is where we see probably when there's a fading in the kind of funds that investors have, they'll probably make the correct adjustment, be it in terms of the bigger names. So you examine the trend though for those who actually profited off cryptocurrency or even meme stocks that were in trend at the start of the year, they'll probably be de-risking and putting their funds back in the big tech names such as Apple. So as things get more uncertain during the year, it's not really a one-direction buy play such as 2020, right? Mm. So anyway, I would say probably it's a good factor, it's a positive factor for tech stocks, but of course only for those bigger names.
Yeah. All right. We've been chatting with David Ho. He's the investment strategist for RHB Bank Singapore. David, thanks for your market outlook.
Thank you so much.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.